Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Over the last few weeks, we've been unpacking the company results of various banking institutions in South Africa. And if you've been listening to Kaya Biz, you'd be well aware around how vast, wide, and in-depth our conversations have been. Everything from things results just last week, where they reported phenomenal double-digit return on equity, a key measure and metric when it comes to the banking environment, which sat at 20% for the group and for FNB overall. Then we took a look at Standard Bank, which too had also experienced significant growth within its operations locally, but also on the African continent. Nedbank, as we know, experiencing some pressure and challenges with regard to its partnership across the continent, and as a result, reducing its exposure to some of those markets. Absa, on the other hand, beefing up its team under the new leadership to actually make sure that it can grow. And whilst we've typically always focused on the big four, there's a big five we need to be mindful of. Because if you consider the fact that Capitec has now surpassed First Rand Group in terms of its market cap, in other words, what the share is worth on the stock market, that also puts things into perspective in terms of value, growth, and key markets and operations where these businesses hope to grow. Someone who has done a lot of this research and is going to give us some perspective primarily on the big four banks, we join now by Rivan Vasan, the battle of the banks in 2025. And it seems as though there have been some very, very interesting dynamics at play. Rivan, such a pleasure to have you, and welcome back to Kaya Biz.
Good evening to you, Gugu. It's great to be with you, and thank you for having me.
I can imagine that this year's report was a very exciting one for you and the team to put together, because there's been some interesting shifts within the market dynamics, from leadership, strategy, even down to what we see in terms of company market valuations.
Gugu, absolutely. I think we are fortunate in South Africa that we have a vibrant and dynamic banking sector, and you're quite right, putting together the analysis every 6 months, in particular this one, was certainly very exciting.
Definitely. I guess first things first, as we do take a look just overall at the strength of South African banks. This is something that you and I have often spoken about in terms of our resilience, especially in comparison to our counterparts in Europe as well as the US. When you take a look at the top line overview of the numbers, what does it tell us about the health of our banking institutions in the country?
Gugu, I think you summarized it quite well in your introduction. It really was a really strong, resilient financial performance by our major banks. But as always, when we look at banking results, we do think it's important to place them within the context of the broader environment in which those results were achieved. Now, if we look at the first 6 months of 2025, what we had was a period of intense uncertainty brought about by, amongst other things, geopolitical tensions, uncertainty driven by trade tariffs, as well as some foreign currency volatility. Of course, in South Africa, we have the continued theme of low economic growth, largely due to several structural constraints that have been discussed before. But on the positive side for consumers, the interest rate hiking cycle that we saw not too long ago looks to have abated, and that resulted in lower interest rates than we had just, say, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And all of that sets the scene for this set of major bank results. And really, with that as background, we do think that South Africa's major banks delivered a strong, resilient performance in the first half that is reflected across a range of measures. For example, what we see is balance sheets continuing to grow, mm-hmm. both on the funding side, deposits were up just over 10.5%, and on the lending side, gross loans and advances were up around 6.5% if you compare to June 2024. And that shows you that business and consumer appetite for banking services was very much still there. That, of course, provided the basis for the banks to do more with customers, processing transactions, taking deposits, and lending. And so you saw all of that translate into strong top-line growth with continued revenue momentum across both interest margins as well as non-interest revenue, combining to result in operating income growing nearly 7.1% for the period. So overall, you know, this is what we would describe as a strong financial performance.
100%. I appreciate that you've actually made the numbers make sense here, Rivan. Looking at the chart in your report, all the major indices, non-interest income, net interest income, non-interest revenue, operating income, ROE, all of these really do show that they're positive indicators here in terms of the operations of the business. And maybe that does take us as well to loan formation as well as credit quality, because this is something that we as consumers understand. Not only does it impact us directly, but also big businesses and the lending requirements that they have from the banks. What key trends stood out here?
Gugu, on a combined basis, the credit impairment charges decreased just under 2% against the comparative period in June last year. And that led to the credit loss ratio, which is a much watched metric for banks, falling to around 220 basis points from around 236 basis points last year. Now, this was driven by a combination of factors, some of which include the credit models that banks use to determine their credit impairment charges have incorporated that lower interest rate outlook. And of course, we'll see where the MPC lands later this week on Thursday and what that might do to the impairment outlook going forward. We have seen some long-standing non-performing loans being worked out particularly in retail banking, that is the everyday banking that you and I and millions of South Africans participate at the banks call early arrears. And that's really a result of proactive customer assistance programs that banks offer, enhanced collection processes implemented by them, and all of that contributed to a slight decline in credit risk for this period.
What I'm saying, Rivan, and this has just been my view as an outsider reading the numbers and engaging with some of the leaders, it does seem as though retail bank and even business banking has been a little bit more robust than corporate and investment banking. Is my assessment correct? Because I also tried to interlink this to GDP figures that recently came out for the second quarter, and there's still a low level of fixed income, fixed capital investment that's taking place within the South African economy. And typically, that would come from a CIB division where big business is participating in significant deals. Is this view fair? Or help us make sense of the different divisions and dynamics of the banks.
Yeah, Google, I think you hit the nail on the head that we are seeing increased banking, retail banking competition in South Africa, and that's been driven by some new entrants that we've had in recent years. At the same time, you see banking adjacent financial services companies. So those without a banking license necessarily, so they may not take deposits, but they certainly do engage in banking activity like lending and payments and remittance services. So that's making retail banking competition quite robust in the South African environment. The same is true if you look at the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, where you have quite a number of fairly advanced fintech players that play in retail banking, payments, data analytics, and so on. And what, you know, competition on the one hand from a retail banking perspective is really good for customers because it drives prices down, it increases the quality of services that we receive, and we see that translate in how the banks position themselves. On the corporate and investment banking side, you know, what you have in South Africa is a situation where most large corporates are multi-banked. The treasury functions of corporates will have accounts with various banks. It is also a highly competitive environment, made more so by the current economic uncertainty in South Africa, in Africa, as well as globally. But competition is generally a good thing from the perspective of customers. And of course, the bank management teams will tell you that they compete vigorously because they pride themselves on offering the best to customers.
I can just imagine what it's like in those corridors, hey, moving back and forth and trying to make sure that you close the deal with the big clients. But let's bring it closer to two themes that you have touched on. Firstly is, of course, a shift and a change to the regulatory environment, especially when it comes to equalizing the field for banked and non-banking platforms that are able to participate in payments. That is also driven by, I guess, just the boom that we're seeing in digital foundations. And I sat back and I thought about this. You know, when I go to the shopping center and I pay for parking, I'm either one of those who has an app that allows me to go into the parking bay, or I tap my phone. And a lot of people also do this. And I think that also tells us where we are shifting to in terms of trying to be a cashless society. This is also reflected in your report.
It absolutely is, Boo. And maybe on your first point on the regulatory environment, I think we've been very fortunate in South Africa to have a really strong regulator in the form of the Prudential Authority at the SARB, who has for quite some time consistently aligned South Africa's regulatory framework that banks are subject to international best practice and standards that come out of the Basel Committee in Switzerland. And that has been the spine of the banking system, which our banks generally over comply with. So you'll see capital adequacy ratios, liquidity ratios well above the regulatory minima, because they don't see that as just compliance. They see that as a license to operate, and they take that very seriously. That really is at the heart of their financial stability. To comment on the point you make around digital transformation, absolutely. I think one of the themes of our analysis for this period is the fact that you now have around 21 million digitally active customers that conduct banking operations via mobile and online channels. Mm. And that number, you know, just 10 years ago was a fraction of that. So it just shows you that the banks strategically have been very focused on digitizing themselves internally, as well as being very attuned to customer trends and market and technology trends that allow them to make banking easier, to the point where it is rare for lots of customers these days to conduct any banking activity in the branch. Of course, there is a place for the branch, as the bank management teams talk about, but really they have put customer experience at the center of their missions. And that is as a result of taking advantage of technological trends and making sure that banking these days, at least from a retail perspective, is carried out largely through digital channels.
Mm. This brings us to a very interesting assessment, Rivan, and I can imagine, you know, depending on how you actually decide to view or peel at this particular layer of the conversation, different views can come up. But when we take a look at the scale of South African banks and the market that has really become so competitive, we can look at the metrics to see who has the most customers, and Capitec certainly takes the lead there, servicing more than 24 million clients. But we're also well aware that the banking culture in South Africa is that, on average, most South Africans have more than one bank account. And this actually speaks to opportunities north of our borders. But depending on which banking results you read, there are different outcomes here in terms of the opportunity, but also the challenge of doing business across the continent.
Hugo, that's absolutely spot on. I think what is quite clear if you look at banking results is that there continues to be quite an intense strategic focus on the part of most of the banks, not all of them, included in our analysis, that believe the growth opportunities in the rest of Africa are significant. And if you look at economic growth rates in sub-Saharan Africa versus South Africa, you will find that sub-Saharan Africa is quite a bit ahead. It is also a highly competitive environment in the rest of Africa. Mm-hmm. And of course, every country is different. So one needs to be careful about not bucketing Africa overall. But what you do see for those banks who have sizable operations in sub-Saharan Africa, the contribution of earnings to overall group earnings is now north of 40% in some instances. But Africa is nuanced, as you rightly mentioned. There are significant opportunities and there are some risks. And so you do see the banks balancing some of those market-specific risks. For example, the impact of trade tariffs are expected to affect some countries more acutely than others, and that gives rise to increased sovereign risks. There is also foreign currency risk that is present in translating those results back into rands.
Yep.
And so you will find, for example, some banks increasingly measure success in what they call constant currency terms to better assess the underlying business performance without the noise of foreign exchange volatility.
Sure. Such interesting times, Rivan. I'd love to be a fly on the boardroom when you speak to your team about these different dynamics. At that point, we haven't even touched on some of the digital banks. We haven't even touched on the acquisitions that have taken place from the banks regarding payment platforms and systems that they're looking to purchase. So there's a lot going on. And I can imagine that it leads to so much more excitement regarding the banking and capital market space in South Africa. Thank you again for your time.
Thanks, Hugo.
That's Rivan Rupnarain, PwC South Africa Banking and Capital Markets Partner, helping us reflect on the 2025 banking report that is yearly published by PwC. And as you've heard, the battle of the banks, it certainly does seem as though the numbers have grown, and Capitec being included in this particular report does show you the level of growth that this business has seen. Started what? 30 years ago, you might recall when we spoke to Gerry Fourie, the former CEO of the business and one of the founding fathers of it, when he recently stepped down and went into retirement. There is a lot of legacy as to how they've been able to capture the market over the last few years. Servicing more than 24 million South Africans, that's almost half of our adult population that is able to have a bank account. But that doesn't mean that Nedbank, FirstRand and FNB, including the likes of Standard Bank and Absa, have been resting on their laurels. If anything, we do see that the banking environment is incredibly competitive, because if you include the likes of Sasfin, African Bank, Investec, it just shows you how robust it is in terms of the metrics, the numbers, and the battle to win clients on. If that isn't enough, it is payment systems. As you can tell, this is one topic that gets me very excited, because these are institutions that monitor the movement of money. Whether it's you and I paying for parking, a loaf of spread or participating in major mergers and acquisitions and trying to raise funding to actually list on capital markets, the banks have a front row seat to the activity we see in our economy. So ultimately, the data, insights and information that they can share is far-reaching.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.